This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. The dust has barely settled from that win over United, but what does it mean in the context of City season? It's Tuesday, the 5th of March. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Lee Bardsley.
I'm John Ashley.
And this is the City Report podcast.
Here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content in this what hopes to be another treble running. Whisper it, we are still in those three competitions, much like this time last year. Kicking off your Tuesday, we've got a battle of Tameside versus Derbyshire in the Staley Bridge corner. We've got John Ashley in the Glossop corner. We've got Luke Bardsley. Luke, is that a smile? Is it a grimace? Is it a frown? Or is your computer screen just froze?
I'm not from Derbyshire. I literally grew up round the corner from John. Like, I'm not even joking. We are round the corner from each other. That is a fact.
I mean, I'm technically 3,000 miles away from you.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Now,
let's not all get hoity-toity about America right now. We're talking about where you grew up, where you're born and bred.
Fair enough.
It's already started.
We love each other, really, guys. Like, we've met each other now. We're best of friends.
Yeah, I've had to separate them virtually at the start of this recording. But yeah, let's pick up the pieces from Sunday's win over Manchester United. John, as a long-time Blue, you've suffered. I think you brought up a stat in the build-up to the game. You shared it privately. Was it you had to wait until you were 13 years old to get your first win over United, or possibly second win or something like that? So imagine days like Sunday still mean that a little bit more compared to other wins.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it was I couldn't remember the first derby win during my lifetime, which was the 5-1 in 1989, because I wasn't even two. But then the next one wasn't until I was 15, which was the last derby at Main Road in 2002. So yeah, that was a fun childhood. And so yeah, every derby victory is incredibly satisfying still, just having lived through that kind of torment, if you like.
I know exactly what you mean. Luke, it's funny, when City are in this sort of form, we have a performance like that, I'd almost want the next game to come along immediately after full time. But given that, I think it's made even better the fact obviously Arsenal played on Monday, but it was that last game of the weekend slot in terms of Saturday, Sunday. We had all of sort of Sunday nights reveling it, and then Monday you're waking up, you're watching all, you just kind of want this to go on forever. And it's sort of damning that there is a massive, massive, possibly season defining game on Sunday, because unless we get a similar result there, it feels like the good vibes, you basically just want those vibes to continue.
100%. I mean, my day at work today has been so unproductive and I don't care. I'm still in the South Stand at the moment. What an unbelievable celebration. I've been singing Oscar Bob in my head for, I'm going to sing it all week. I don't even care.
He only played about 40 seconds as well.
Do I care? We, Oscar Bob just is potentially pound for pound the best City chant of all time. Like, I've never seen a crowd get so into it. Like, as soon as that happened in the 94th, 95th minute, whatever, the whole crowd erupted. And then for the next 10 minutes after full time, all you can hear in my stand was Oscar Bob's name chanting over and over again. I love him. I love the celebrations. Like, wow, it was bouncing. Probably not Real Madrid levels, in my opinion, but it was big. And you could just see, I think you said it perfectly, Amos. I think it was yourself. You said that the goal was just, well, the fans were just like beckoning it into the goal. We were just dragging it towards us. And it was just a great second half performance. And I can't wait to talk about it in more depth.
Yeah, I mean, let's pick up on the atmosphere, because I think it was probably the best atmosphere in the ground since that Real Madrid game you referenced. And you could definitely feel it. I don't know how it translated for you, John, on TV, but that second half, having watched it back, I mean, it was basically a training session for City, and maybe this leads on to a point about the performance as well, but did it translate over onto television, just the noise and that sort of, the goal comes out of kind of nothing for City. It's a decent build-up play, wonderful strike. United could probably close Foden down a little bit more, but it just felt like that entire 45 minutes, both when City were trailing and level, the ball was being sucked towards that goal.
Yeah, that definitely came across on TV, and there's something about City going behind at home that I think actually really charges the atmosphere even more in terms of sustaining it, and you know, getting the equaliser when we did. After that equaliser, things actually went a bit quiet on the pitch in terms of chance creation. There was a bit of a lull in creating gilt-edged chances, but the crowd kind of kept going. And kept City going. And so I think if it was, you know, if it's the other way around and City take the lead and United equalise, it wouldn't be nearly as loud. And so just how everything kind of worked out meant that the crowd ended up carrying the players through this very relatively low chance period of the game.
Yeah, it was interesting because I think a smoke bomb was set off. It wasn't you, was it, Luke? It came firing from the South Stand. You've not got anything to admit to us?
I couldn't see a thing, mate. I was too busy, like, with people all around me. Like, I didn't even see Foden's goal. I was too busy looking at the other. I was looking in the United fan. There was a ball man who was getting it quite a bit off me. But yeah, it wasn't me. It was a smoke bomb. I don't know why you throw smoke bombs onto the pitch. Like, I get why Bernardo was so annoyed about it.
But also,
a guaranteed ban. What are you doing? Yeah, there's cameras in every aspect of the stadium.
Yeah,
like, why are you setting off a smoke bomb? Just leave it until before or after the game. Like, I don't get it.
It was silly. My point being, ironically, yes, it was obviously dumb of the person to do it, but it almost gave the City fans this sort of moment when it was being cleared. It's like a minute. I can't remember which song it was, sort of reverberating around the ground, but even though Bernardo was pissed off, it did give that chance to really get the atmosphere going. And I think that contributed. Guardiola spoke about it. Another point that's come up on the back of it, Luke, like I said, this episode today was sort of picking the bones and picking up from where some talking points we didn't speak about in yesterday's immediate reaction. And listeners, I implore you, if you haven't already, do go and listen to it. But kicking towards the South Stand, now you and I are both in that part of the ground, so perhaps we're not the right people to speak about it, but it's something that's popped up a couple of times before. And I want to say, you know, there are some diehards in the family stand. There are people who've been going for years and years and years, and this isn't to say that, oh, because City kicked towards the South Stand in the second half, they've got better chances, etc., or that's where the quote-unquote proper fans are. But I don't know, just personally, it does feel like nowadays when City, like you say, John, are chasing the game, it does feel like maybe that's kind of the way to go. I don't know. In fact, it'd be interesting to see. I was trying to find out whether or not City decided to change it round, or whether United won the toss. I don't know how you'd go about finding that. If any listeners know the answer to that, please let us know. But yeah, Luke, it felt like that kind of played a part. I don't know.
No, I think it massively played a part. Don't get me wrong, I sat in the family stand for a good 10 years, maybe. I loved it, sitting in the family stand, and I loved them kicking towards the second half. It felt big. I don't know. We obviously have the history of kicking towards the family stand, where we've scored countless memorable goals time and time again. Company against Leicester, Aguero moment. There's been time and time again. I get why we do it for the history reasons, but for me, the main part isn't the benefit it gives City. I think it's the benefit it gives opponents, where give them a bit of boost at the start. Give them a bit of boost at the first half, because you know how good we are at coming from behind. Whereas when they are kicking towards their fans in the second half, it brings the atmosphere from the away fans, and it really brings a big second half performance from the team. So we want to be kicking towards our most vocal support as well, but it's more of a case of, I don't think we should be giving away teams an advantage. Like we're too nice already. Like some teams in the Premier League or in England just shove their away fans in the gods never to be seen again. Like we don't do that. We give them. Of course, it's spread across three tiers. It's not the best away ground in the league, I will admit that. But to give them an advantage of kicking towards us in the second half, where potentially they can have a 10-minute spurt of atmosphere that spurs them on, score two goals, potentially win a game, I think kick towards us at every single game you can, personally.
I think it's definitely more on the away side than the home side, because I went to the Everton and Chelsea games recently. I sat south stand end for the Everton game and north stand end for the Chelsea game. And, you know, there was adversity in City. We're trying to get into the game or get ahead in both of those games. And the atmosphere really was, I didn't notice that much of a different atmosphere in terms of the home fans. The away fans, though, I think the way that Everton, actually, it kind of maybe worked differently at Everton, because they were defending so much that actually having their fans closer to them, possibly, it worked in their favour. But I guess it depends on the opponents, and also depends on the fan bases as well, I think.
The alternative argument is that, as we saw Real Madrid, as we've seen a couple of times in the past, having the quote unquote, other people's words, not mine, most vocal end of the stadium, you can blow teams away in the first half. Real Madrid is an example of that, of course, where you start so quick and suddenly the game's won by half time and you can have that almost training session feel to it in the second half. I don't know. It's probably something that will rumble on, as is debates about the performance itself from City. And I think LB, formerly of City Extra, now doing his own thing on YouTube and whatnot, I'm sure most listeners will be aware, but he put out a great tweet saying, I've seen some people call it the best performance of the season, I've seen some people say we're ropey, his personal opinion, and I happen to share it as well, it was probably somewhere in the middle, a 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10, all things considered. John, where are you coming in on this? Because look, we have to speak relatively here, don't we? Because was it a good performance from City? Yes. But I think my personal gripes is that I still feel like there's a level or two to go up, particularly in that first half. I felt City was shaky in transition. Okay, was that because United set up the way they did? Yes. Did we concede a lot? No. But at the same time, I wasn't too pleased at halftime. Being said, at full time, felt like it was, in all, a decent enough showing, and well, in fact, a very good showing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was potentially our best performance at home this calendar year, for sure. I think we've been pretty mediocre at home in the early part of the season. In the early part of 2024. But I don't think it was our best performance of the season. Brentford away comes to mind pretty early on, in terms of how good we were in that game, how many chances we created and how dominant we were against a side who kind of acquitted themselves really well, unlike United did yesterday. I think my biggest takeaway from yesterday was how poor United were. And
they really were bad.
Like, and because of that, City should have blown them away. And you know, they should have been aware that the kind of attack that they did score from, you know, it was a ridiculous finish. There's not much you can do about it. You let them shoot from there for the most part, but like that was going to be the kind of chance that they were going to create. And then they just sat back and did nothing for the rest of the game. So how bad United were really needs to be factored in here. people are saying it's the best performance since that Real Madrid performance. Well, look at that Real Madrid performance and how much better that was. Yes,
I think that's a bit of an affront, to be honest. I think that's a bit, not sly, but I think it's like, Jesus Christ, that it does it disservice to that Real Madrid game because that was just so good.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a derby game as well. So, like, you don't really often expect the best performances to be in derby games because anything can happen, and it did. Like right at the start, there, like the goal out of nowhere, and they could have dug in. You know, if the second half had been like the first half, we might not have scored. But City were encouraging yesterday. I was encouraged that we're on our way back towards the level that we need to be to succeed in all these three competitions, but the big test will be next week at Anfield for sure.
It's a shadow lingering over this result, I feel like, and the way we speak about it, because I fear, we said it yesterday on the review show as well, I fear if City even give one of those chances to Liverpool, then Salah's going to score, or whoever else will be playing might go and score. Just quickly, Luke, because like I said, we did do a bit on the performance yesterday, but I'm interested to see your thoughts on it. I guess that the point we should make here is you wouldn't necessarily want City at this point, first weekend of March. I think this time last year, the corresponding fixture was Newcastle at home. And I think that was, I remember saying it after that game, ironically, Foden scored, I think, if I remember correctly. And we were saying, oh, that's probably one of City's best performances in a while. You know, are we getting back up to that speed? But the overall point being, you wouldn't want City peaking now because they still 2 months and possibly 20 odd fixtures to go in the campaign. So I think John's right, isn't he? It's encouraging to have those signs, but we maybe don't need the hyperbole of best performance of the season so far.
No, we're far from best performance of the season so far. Far from it, in my opinion. I want to give Erik ten Hag a couple flowers, in my opinion.
Sorry?
I thought
his Are you Gary Neville?
I thought his tactics first half were perfect. Wingers high and wide, Bruno in the middle trying to play the ball over the top. You had Mainoo doing the dirty work. Casemiro, they were covering him because he's just super slow. Super slow. If he had half decent side, they'd have beat us. But he's got shit players, hasn't he? It wasn't Ten Hag's fault. And if they'd have had Højlund up front, oh my God, that could have been a different gravy, mate. Yeah. Imagine if he had them two breakaway chances about Rashford. Mm. He ain't going down. He's going to run and he's going to probably score if not get a shot on target. Like, I think if they'd have had Højlund, it'd have been a completely different game. Luckily, they didn't, and it worked in our favour. So I don't think Ten Hag should get any sort of displays. It's not his fault. He's got a shit team, and he's got shit recruitment, and the team is shit. But
tell us what you really think, Luke.
Oh, I'm always going to be very vocal about Man United. It's embarrassing how bad they are. The fact they brought on Willy Cambuaro and everyone turned around and went, who is he? And I just thought, this is hilarious.
For Johnny Evans, nonetheless. Yeah.
And in his defence, Willy Cambuaro, he weren't that bad. He was all right, but Johnny Evans looked like a horse that's about to get put down. He was just struggling. And I feel for him because he's been such a good Premier League centre-half for many years. Mm. But when I felt sorry for him. You're coming up against Erling Haaland, he's just going to bully you. Mm. And I felt for him like a little bit. But like on the whole, with our performance, it was spirited in the second half, is how I like to describe it. Nowhere near our best, but it makes me excited because we can only get better than that as well. And Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, he just likes to spark the game into life. And I know we mentioned a little bit about John Stones as well, who is the most underrated football player of all time now, I think. He is.
Of all time.
He just does. He's so calm. He is ridiculous on the ball. He's a centre-half. Let's not forget this. He's a centre-half where when he first came to City in his first year and a half, people were calling for him to be sold. That's how shaky he came in. He used to make mistake after mistake, and he has just grown into this composed, like, elegant midfielder who could, I'm not going to lie, you could put him in the Barca team in, like, early 2010s, and he'd probably fit in. He's that good. It is ridiculous how good he is. I don't know about you two, but I love John Stones.
For a centre-half to essentially just be seemingly just moving further and further forward as each season progresses. Like, Erling Haaland's going to start getting worried kind of this time next season because he's, but and genuinely, I think if we had a centre forward crisis, John Stones wouldn't be
probably
like a bad option up there. He just needs to be.
This is going to be one of those clips, isn't it, where Haaland's going to be out, Alvarez is going to be out, Foden's going to be injured or suspended, something, and John Stones plays centre half. We'll bring it back and we'll go, oh yeah, John Ashley, the Oracle.
Yeah, well, I said it a few years ago about him playing in the centre midfield role, and so it would be a natural continuation of that. But I think it's his composure, and I think it's also the naivety of some of the opponents who think that he is just a centre half who's out of his depth up there, and they try and make tackles that they maybe wouldn't try on a De Bruyne or a Rodri. And Stonesy just sidesteps him and finds the space and plays a pass, and so he helps us in transition as well, and finds space for other players. So yeah, ridiculous player.
Yeah, just quickly before we go for the break, a comment just on that sort of first half, second half comparison, John. I know you wanted to bring this up. Panic versus calm. It sort of proved. Well, it showed its virtue, didn't it, really, in terms of, I felt like after City went behind, the first 10 minutes after that was, oh my God, we've got to equalise immediately because this Man United team's terrible. They can't string two passes together, and we how dare us be losing. But I think slowly but surely, as the half went on and even going into second half, we kind of saw that old City of just, okay, foot on the ball, pass it and we'll score.
Yeah, I think part of that was driven by, it really felt like a City goal was coming early as well. Like it felt, we started really strong. We had a corner after 40 seconds, I think. And it felt like the early City goal was inevitable. And the United goal was a sucker punch in about three different ways. So I think after that, it's like, no, we don't deserve to be behind. And there was an element of injustice that was fueling that panic. But after that had gone, and I think it took, the half chance for United when Rashford almost got through and the ball didn't bounce quite right for him. And then there was another one where McTominay was free in the middle as well, that we realised that if we keep going like this, we're potentially going to concede a second. If we keep forcing it too much, we just need to play our patient game. United were happy with that as well, apparently. And then we created some good chances in the first half and just didn't finish him off. And I think that gave us, again, and that probably would have been Pep's message at halftime, I imagine. Just keep doing what you're doing, and the goal will come. And it kind of did, although, with that first half, you wouldn't have bet that it would have been a Phil Foden screamer from 20 yards that would have equalised for City. You'd expected a tap in. It was really good. I think Bernardo was also kind of just orchestrating that on the field as well, Luke.
Yeah, I really wanted to mention that. Like, it looked like we had a team of leaders versus United that don't have a team of leaders. Like, you could just tell at certain points that there were certain very sort of like figure points of our dressing room and figure points of our attack and team over the last few years where they take the game by the scruff of the neck, and Bernardo Silva's one of them. I mean, the clip's gone viral, hasn't it, from around the 20-minute mark where United have that counter-attack, we snip it out, and then the crowd are just getting a bit aggy, like, we need to get it forward quick. And he literally just stops the ball dead, puts his hand up, and just tells the whole world to calm down. And it worked, because everybody instantly felt relieved and was like, of course, we're Man City. Like, why are we rushing things? We won a treble based on sort of like control possession tactics last year. Like, why are we not doing that again? And the fact that a player can just have that calm, collected head really does help spur everybody on. And then from that, we had two very good chances at the end of the first half. Probably should have scored them, but oh well, it happens. You've got a striker. Sometimes they're going to make blunders like that. But that's part of football, and you have to just appreciate the ruffle of the smooth, really. But Bernardo Silva really inspired that comeback, I thought, yesterday, and he deserves his flowers.
Yeah, another fantastic performance from him. God knows what we'll do when/if he leaves at the end of the season. It does feel like our time with him is coming towards an end, so just enjoy it, I guess. That'll do for part one. Join us after this quick break.
And there it is.
is that's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your second episode of a jubilant start to the week. Hopefully that continues against Copenhagen tomorrow. Preview, as usual, on match day will be in your podcast feed Wednesday morning. I wanted to finish today's show speaking about a topic that has also cropped up and sort of maybe a poignant one, Foden versus Rashford. I wrote about this for City Extra this week, so listeners, if you want to put yourself through that, go and have a read of that. But John, we are in some ways all Englishmen on here supporting the English national team, and it is, I guess, for us anyway, relevant heading into a summer where there's a European Championships. But the contrast between Phil Foden and Marcus Rashford, who for probably the best part of a decade now, just under, have been billed as each team in Manchester's sort of superstar, young talent, the player who's going to be the face of the club for the next 10 years. It was just a poignant moment, the way Phil Foden took the game by the scruff of the neck, and Rashford, although scoring, kind of was left in his shadow a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they've kind of gone on different trajectories, for sure. You know, Rashford burst onto the scene, for want of a better phrase.
All right, Matthew Richards.
Yeah. I was literally thinking that as I said it. And then Foden has his stock has just gradually been rising, and then I think it's been affected by the respective teams that they've been in as well. You know, Rashford being United's shining light for several seasons now, alongside the work that he's done off the pitch, whereas Foden has generally been a bit quieter. That's generally more his style, and you know, in the context of this team, this City team that has this ridiculous attack, getting used sparingly, and then having an increasing role, I think he's finally, to use a Luke Bardsley phrase, getting his flowers and being recognised for what he can contribute. And I'm really glad that Southgate was there yesterday just to kind of see that in the flesh in terms of how Foden can kind of control the game by himself now and take the game by the scruff of the neck. You know, I don't think there's anyone else in the England setup who can pick the ball up like he can in such a tight space and keep it.
Is there anyone England have ever had, not just in this current crop, but he isn't? It's hilarious, the fact that, and I say this as a proud Stockport person myself, but he is just a lad from Stockport. He looks just like a lad from Stockport, but he's got this grace and this technical ability of one of the Barcelona lads from the 2010s, to go back to that, like you said before, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, a lad from Stockport is currently on course to win Premier League Player of the Year, and I feel like we need to talk about this more and more so the media pick it up, because this man has been sensational all year round, and he's been so consistent. I mean, his Premier League numbers on their own, you're looking at 11 goals, 7 assists, and we've still got 2 months to play of the season where he's going to inevitably, in my opinion, get to a 15-goal mark, which is like Frank Lampard, Steven Gerrard's sort of territory, which is amazing.
Yaya Toure get in 2013-14? Was it
20, I think.
Yeah, 20.
And he was taking penalties as well, wasn't
penalties
he?
And free kicks. Like, he was on every set piece, whereas Foden doesn't have that. But it's more of a case of, with Phil Foden and obviously with the England talk as well, like, England are so exciting. And to have someone like Phil Foden who can play on the right, play on the left, play in the middle, and he won't look out of place at all. He's so exciting. And let's not remember that he is 23 years of age. We have 10 more years of Phil Foden to come, and he's already won 5 Premier Leagues. Like, he is a joke of a player, and I can't wait to see what else he does in his, not even England career, City career as well.
Yeah, I think it was Andrew and yourself, John, a couple of weeks ago on one of the recent episodes where you said, you know, there's every chance that you could go on and become the club's most record all-time appearance maker. We're in that sort of category, aren't we? And look, trajectories might dip. He's, and this is one of the points I wanted to make, actually, but to go back to the early years of Phil Foden, it was, all of the talk was, get him out on loan. And Guardiola came out multiple times and said, we've had offers from, you know, big clubs in Europe. I can't remember if there's Borussia Dortmund or someone along them lines in there as well. But, you know, he could have gone on and he could have been playing 30 games a season, aged 19 years old. He was that good. But we've seen the greatness of Guardiola, for me, in his handling of Phil Foden. And people throw the term checkbook manager at him, but I, for my money, in terms of world-class talent anyway, not just sort of regular youth talent, I think maybe other managers could be ahead of him here, but in terms of developing a truly world-class talent, Guardiola's probably the best in the business, and Lionel Messi, Sergio Busquets, Phil Foden, now he's on that list and we're seeing it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's testament to Guardiola's coaching. If you look at the second goal that City scored yesterday, Phil's second, just how, like, innate Phil makes the fact that once he's given the ball to Alvarez, like, it's there is not a split second of hesitation that he's going directly for the space for the 1-2. He knows where the space is. His marker is instantly half a step behind him, which gives him the space to take the touch and finish the way that he does. But yeah, I mean, he's also been working on his finishing as well. I said earlier in the season that his finishing seems to have, you know, be two extremes. It's either like the goal he scored, his opener, where it's absolutely unstoppable, or he just fluffs it completely. And he says he's been working on his finishing, and you can see that as well. And as he scores more and more, that's just going to be an aspect of his game that grows, which arguably is the one area of his game that he needed to develop more. And he's already at the sky, but whatever the stratosphere is the limit for this kid.
It feels like that, doesn't it? Look, hopefully it continues. I think he's already broken his tally, best tally for an individual campaign with 18 goals across all competitions, maybe one or two in the Club World Cup there. So maybe with a pinch of salt, but he's certainly going to go and have a record-breaking season, at least on an individual level. And look, Premier League Player of the Season, I mentioned it back in early January, I think it was, that after the Huddersfield game, funnily enough, and I think it could definitely be the case. Chaps, final sort of just point, sort of setting up the week, obviously Champions League action, and touch wood, you would expect City to progress ahead of that league meeting against Liverpool. But Luke, what just to wrap on the United game, what do you think it means in the context of City's season? I felt heading into it, City not only needed a win, they couldn't afford to drop any points, either losing or drawing, but I felt like they needed a statement for the rest of the league to say, look, we're serious, going to Anfield and saying, you know, we can still blow teams away. Did they answer that question? I don't know. I think the second half could have easily ended up with a higher scoreline, 3-1 probably. United would have taken it beforehand, but the context of the performance does say City were very much the better team. Do you think City have got it in them to go on into Anfield and beyond and retain the Premier League title? Or do you think maybe we still have to have another performance a little bit like that starting on Sunday afternoon in Merseyside?
No, yes, I'm firmly in the camp of we're going to win the league. Everyone knows I'm very, very positive when it comes to Man City nowadays. Like, I just appreciate how good this team is, and I'm enjoying every second before Pep's eventual departure. In regards to sort of like what this win means, I mean, it means everything for me as a fan. For Pep, probably doesn't mean a lot. He's probably expecting that set of performance, and he expects from his players that performance every week. And I don't think his approach has changed based on us beating United. I think it was always a case of every single game comes and you win every game. I think probably the win against Copenhagen will probably mean more to him than the win against United. Like, that's just how Pep is as a manager. He wants the best at all times. I'm very excited to see how we play at Anfield. I think it's going to be Andrew Detmer's wet dream, that game, where you've got two very good managers who are going to try and outthink each other. And I personally can't wait for it. If you're going to the game and you manage to hold your nerve, I respect you, because it's going to be horrific inside the ground. It's going to be one of the games where I'm actually going to enjoy, I think, watching it from home. But I'm thoroughly excited for that game. And I really, really believe we can go to Anfield and we can make a statement.
All right, Kevin Keegan. Less thinking about Andrew Detmer's wet dreams, John. But yeah, it does feel like, I don't know, we'll look back at the end of the season, we'll have hindsight and we'll say this meant this and this meant that. But just in the moment, it feels like that United game was the perfect balance, to summarise, the perfect balance of wonderful and still stuff to work on, for want of a more articulated phrase.
Yeah, I'm just still trying to regather my thoughts here after what Luke just said. But I think, you know, if we take it outside of the derby context as well, that, you know, given the manner of Liverpool's win the day before and the fact that City were a goal down at half-time, having played pretty poorly at home in the early part of this year, what we get out of that performance, I think, could be something that really boosts us going forward, rather than like the actual game and performance itself. It's where it takes us rather than what it gives us in the moment, if that makes sense. So for me, that in the context of the title race, I think it was a huge win. Good performance, encouraging going forward. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but potentially, you know, and we'll see come the end of the season, potentially seismic. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, it could be a win that lays the groundwork for something very special. We've seen that once or twice before in recent years, and here's fingers crossed. Listeners, thank you very much for your company. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow previewing the Copenhagen game, which feels like a little bit of an afterthought with that Liverpool game at the weekend, but it's still a massive fixture. City with a place in the quarterfinals of the Champions League up for grabs. God, 5 years ago, we'd have been salivating at the thought of that. So join us for that tomorrow, and then obviously reviews and previews throughout the week. But lads, Luke, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Cheers, John. Appreciate it as always. It's been a pleasure.
John, thank you very much.
Pleasure, mate.
And until next time, we'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running. And just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.